Welcome, everyone, to the Cornell Veterinary Podcast, where we deep dive into the discovery, care, and learning that happens at Cornell University's College of Veterinary Medicine. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Moyle, visiting assistant clinical professor at Cornell and a veterinary communications manager with Purina, which, so I'm wearing my swag. I feel like I'm double branded today. Also, Cornell hockey fan, and even though this might be heard later, congratulations to the Cornell University women's hockey team on their ECAC championship. So I was repping some hockey today. But here we are. Let's get to our guest, because I'm very excited, because this is not only a person who is in himself an institution at our institution, but I've known him for a long time and call him friend. Joining me today is Dr. Brian Collins, who is a senior lecturer in the section of the community practice. And we're going to talk about that because I want our listeners to know what that means. And an extension veterinarian for the Cornell Richard P. Riney Canine Health Center. She says a mouthful of words. Fellow Cornell Vet alum, the class of 94, and like just kind of like awesome person in general. Like, thank you for joining us today.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate that introduction.
Yeah, he was like, if she keeps talking, I don't actually have to say much. This is great.
Wait, keep going.
Just keep going. I just smile. Well, we know each other through a teaching capacity. I wish I could say I knew you as a student, but I didn't. You're too young for that. Ooh, love that. Love that. But I have met you when I was working at Cornell, and you worked through the community practice. And for everyone listening, that's essentially like our general practice, where we teach students how to be veterinarians in general practice. But the reason why you're here for so many reasons, not just a pretty face. You are here because actually I was excited because you and I got to attend the Westminster Dog Show last month. So like, I'm really drawing you in to talk about that. And I was there as part of my Purina duties because ProPlan sponsors our show. The winner is a ProPlan eater. Shout out to Purina. And you were there and you were serving this kind of really cool capacity. So I want to focus. We'll talk about Westminster, then we'll jump to other things. So why were you there?
I just crashed it.
You showed up? Yeah.
No, but I was there for a couple different reasons. One of the reasons is that Cornell is responsible for providing the on-site emergency care for the Westminster Dog Show. So I've been really fortunate in that I've been able to do that for several years in a row.
That's so cool. So, you know, do you have a lot of emergencies in that setting?
Well, actually, fortunately, this year we had none.
Oh, so I'm thankful for that. We want zero.
Right, right.
Yeah.
But over the years, there have been, you know, a few from time to time, and rarely ever anything emergent.
Yeah.
But we're there just in case. We have everything we need to attend to a dog in a crisis. But fortunately, we rarely have a problem, but we're there just in case, just for everyone's peace of mind.
Oh my gosh. I love that. And to be quite honest, it certainly, there are a lot of expensive breeds, dogs with expensive like heritage and lines. Like, so something emergent may not seem, you know, from the outside, it may not seem very emergent to the person that's listening, but it is very emergent to the owner and the handler. And like, because they have to perform, these animals have to perform, right? So, oh, okay. So I kind of want to dive deeper into that, but I'm going to control myself. And we're going to go the route of, because I do want people to get to know you before we get to focus on these other things. So when you were a kid, did you just want to be a veterinarian? Because I know like a lot of us had different paths. So like, what brought you here to this moment with me?
Oh, fate. Fate. Yes. Yeah, so I was, you know, one of those kids, it sounds kind of cliche, who always wanted to be a vet, you know, ever since I knew that such a thing existed, even though I really didn't know what it meant. I just thought it meant you got to work with animals.
That's the way I was. And I was in college when I thought about that. So what's the differences?
Yeah. Well, I was probably before 10 when I made this decision that I was going to be a veterinarian someday.
Wow.
So yeah, I grew up on a farm in upstate New York. We had cows and pigs and chickens, and occasionally, you know, the old farm vet would pull up in this old station wagon, and you know, get to see what he did, and
kind of James Harriet style, right?
Yes. Like, and that's actually the other thing is back in my day, I don't know how much people know about those books nowadays, but those James Harriet books were really pivotal to my development.
Google those kids. I swear they're still worth the read.
Yes,
just
absolutely.
For kind of the joy that comes from veterinary medicine.
Yeah. And if you're a TV watcher, there was a PBS series of it in the 70s, I believe. The accents were so strong, it was hard to understand them at times. But I remember watching that with my grandparents in particular. Now PBS has actually rebooted it, whole new series. It's awesome. And I definitely recommend it. It'll probably spark another whole generation of veterinarians.
Yeah. For those of you who are listening, this probably won't be on Instagram Reels that I know of, even though I'm in a very good spot on like TikTok and Instagram. I haven't come across that. So you'll probably have to search out PBS, but I would do it because I think it sounds good.
Yes, it's really good.
That's awesome. So do you think it was just the environment and then the books? Was there a moment that you remember where you were like, I can help an animal?
I don't think I can remember a moment. I think it was just a long process. My parents had a farm. My grandparents had a farm. We grew up on the farm that my father grew up on. It's constantly surrounded by animals. You know, I have siblings. They didn't become veterinarians. So there's just something quirky about me that just decided that it was the right thing to do.
Well, I was in the middle of Queens, New York City. And so I think for me, it didn't come as naturally as it came for other people. But that's so neat. And yet here the both of us are, which is why I love veterinary medicine. So I really love like diversity of thought and backgrounds. Right. And so then you had this idea when you were young, you wanted to be a veterinarian. So what was your path like into veterinary medicine and then to where you are now?
Well, you know, I worked my parents' farm all the time until I was in college. And then I lived at home and I was still lived on the farm in college. And at some point,
I hear free labor. I'm hearing free labor for your parents.
Yeah, room war.
You know what? That's valid. That's very valid. Yep.
Yeah. But then at some point I found out about an externship at a wildlife rehabilitation center, actually down toward New York City. And for some reason, I just decided to do it, even though I barely traveled in my life. I think that really kind of catapulted my interest. It was just like something so different. And I just knew that I wanted to work even more with animals after that experience. I did that one summer in college. And then I went back after college graduation and worked there for a year. And then that led to a job as a manager of an animal shelter for 2 years.
Wow.
So I was just trying to build up all these different animal experiences. And it just really confirmed that I wanted to pursue veterinary medicine.
It's really cool because of kind of the breadth of that experience, right? So I want to make sure everybody understands this. You grew up on a farm, you weren't working with wildlife, and you were like, let me just try. And then they were like, yes, come here and we will teach you, right? So there are many opportunities to learn. You don't just walk into veterinary medicine with this knowledge.
Right.
You know, I didn't have that knowledge. I didn't have pets growing up because my family wasn't from the US, so they didn't understand it. So I love that about veterinary medicine. And so you went to Cornell and definitely things have changed since then. So did you stay at Cornell? Did you leave when you graduated and worked and then you came back?
Yeah, because I wanted to be the American version of James Herriot, I went to work in a mixed practice in central New York.
Mixed meaning like cats, dogs, cows, horses, goats.
Pigs, parakeets.
Right?
Snakes, everything that came through the door, yeah. I was willing to give it a try. But yeah, I worked in that practice for 3 years, you know, driving in all kinds of weather, all kinds of animals, lots of fun adventures, worked with a lot of fun people. And then after that, I did come back to Ithaca and worked in a local small animal practice for 13 years.
Wow. So you had a lot under your belt before you came to Cornell.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was it's remarkably similar because I was in practice almost 14 years before I came back to Cornell. I guess like that 13 is our version of a lucky number.
Right.
Now, you worked in the community practice, which obviously I think you and I are very biased, but I think it's an incredibly important service because it's a general practice service. So we see mainly cats and dogs in that aspect, but we see everything. We check their teeth. We examine them when they're limping. We examine them when they're vomiting. We examine them when they're losing their hair. So we I'd like to think someone who is like a family practice doctor, right? Like your general doctor.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite part of practice or why general practice for you? I kind of know why I love it.
I just liked the variety. I just wanted to do everything. Not only did I want to do all the different like areas, dermatology, cardiology, all those things to the best of my ability, but I wanted to do them with all the species as well. I found out that's somewhat challenging at times. Not a reason to not do it, but it certainly can be a challenge. Try to be proficient at all those different species. But yeah, I just like the breadth of all the different conditions and the species, and particularly for me, just developing those relationships with clients for so many years, like having seen, you know, I've spayed a puppy and then I've seen them live, you know, their whole lives. And it's just really very fulfilling for me.
I love that. And I want to make sure everyone understands veterinary medicine, like a kidney in a horse is not the same as feeling a kidney in a cat. And the same thing with eyes, right? So if we look at eyes in goats, they're not the same as eyes in rabbits, not the same in cats. So the breadth of your knowledge is really quite incredible. And so I just wanted to make sure everybody understood that, because I think that there's a lot that goes into it. And that doesn't mean we know everything on the spot. We do a lot of research and we're doing this for years, but I think that that's pretty awesome.
A lot of what we teach the students is how to find the answers to things.
Yes.
How to answer, who to ask, you know, telling your clients you're going to, you know, do some digging around for their pet's behalf. They're very appreciative of that.
Yeah. I love that you mentioned that, because one, I want anybody who's thinking about a future in veterinary medicine to understand that just like human doctors, we can't possibly know everything about everything in any given moment. And I also want people who are listening who own animals to understand that sometimes it's so much, right? But as long as we're willing to have an educated conversation and we know where to start, we have a plan, we can map it out, and then we do this right together. And that really is the most important thing. And I think we build great relationships in general practice, just like you said. So I think that that's part of it. They're willing to work with you and help because we're on this journey to help their pet together. I could talk about this all day, but we have to talk about, actually, we're going to get to Westminster, but one more thing. So I mentioned that you are an extension veterinarian for the Richard P. Reiney Canine Health Center. Can you tell us a little bit more about what the health center does, what you do for the health center?
Yeah, the health center is sort of another way for us to help the public, particularly dog-owning public. So one of our functions is to help raise money for research for the benefit of dogs. So not necessarily research on dogs, but clinical trials and studies to help improve the health of dogs. And the other is to help provide health information for people so that, say, they're researching a particular disease, they can put kidney disease into their web browser and hopefully the Canine Health Center will pop up at the top. And then they can go to our website and find information about kidney disease. They can also email us with specific questions and we
awesome.
With resources about the hospital, a lot of the times what Cornell offers, and just sort of trying to give them some kind of moral support and, you know, somebody to bounce ideas off of.
I love that. And I think what's really important is in this day and age, and this is no jab to social media, right? Social media is what it is. But a lot of people can produce a lot of things and can provide a lot of information. And my concern is always, are they getting the right information that will allow them to take good care of their pet or know when to bring their pet in or learn more about their pet when they hear something, you know, that could be really sad or emotion inducing in an exam room. And so what I'm hearing is Reiney is like allowing for like really reliable information to be available. And that's really important to me as a general practitioner, and I'm sure to you.
Right, right. Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah. That's really key.
Yeah. To provide that general information to the public and also to try to give a personal touch when people reach out to us with questions.
That's so awesome, because it is hard to read and then email, and you know, we get our canned responses like, go talk to your veterinarian, or you know, so it is really nice to kind of get, it's like getting a human operator when you call a customer service.
Yeah.
I'm shocked now when that happens. Like, you're alive? Yes. That's really awesome. And so, and the Canine Health Center does a lot of events. There's going to be like, and part of that was being a presence at Westminster also, because I saw some representatives there. And there's going to be an event at the end of the month, right? I believe in Central Park, there's going to be a 5K run.
Yes, a 5K run to raise money. And we're going to have a lot of dogs and a lot of people running and having a good time.
Yes. I think it's the Bark in the Park is what it's called. And it's going to be in New York City Central Park. I will be there.
Awesome.
I will, on behalf of Purina, because Purina really wants to support healthy mobility and running, walking, whatever they choose to do in our pets. We know it's one of our big passions, right? And I will be there, but I won't be running, like, at all. I will look at people running, but I won't be running because I am not a runner. Yeah. But if anybody's listening, come see me. I'll be at the Purina area.
I'll be there with my dog, Speck.
I love this. So Cornell and Purina have a lovely relationship. And I love it even more because I get to work with doctors like you who are really passionate about the care we give to pets. And so in this setting, it's even more neat. I think that that's a great lead. So we're running, right? And then I'm actually going to use that as my jaunt into Westminster because I had never seen, says girl from Queens, New York, fly ball.
That was intense.
Fly ball is this amazing, for those of you who are listening, Google fly ball, but fly ball and like agility and things like that. So I'd seen some agility, right? Dogs are, you know, doing these courses, right? Where they have to like jump over things and they weave through these poles, which are incredible. It's like a slalom skier. And they're like on like these teeter boards kind of things. But like fly ball, they're like racing and jumping over barriers and they race to like an angled small wall and grab a ball and race back and they're timed.
Just kind of rebound off this. Yeah, it's amazing.
Yeah.
So motivated and they're just having the best time.
Much like the runners who will be running the 5K.
Yeah.
Who are motivated. These dogs are motivated and I have motivation to do neither of these things, but it's really incredible and fun to watch. I agree. They're like ball, 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 right? Like it was incredible. I was worried about them getting hurt, but these dogs are like,
they're so athletic. So
yes,
they're so fit.
They are so fit. Is that what happens when people are fit? They don't get hurt. You wait till you get older, puppies. It happened. But well, that's
real. If you do.
Yeah, thank you for that. Thank you for that. I spoke to Dr. Fry, and who does, you know, sports medicine, and we talked about the similarities and like the aging process and stuff. And I'm sure you come across that. And we also have Westminster, right? So we have these like beautiful breeding dogs who are like the standard of their breeds. Like when you look them up in a textbook and you're like, let me look up Schipperke, which is a real breed, people. I just like to say the word. And you would see a picture of these pets. So they're pretty extraordinary.
Yeah.
That's incredible. So your role at the show was obviously if anything happened emergently, is your role there solely as like doctor? Like, do you get to just kind of, you're on standby as like lead doctor? Are there any other kind of, do you have hands in anything else that's happening there? If you don't, like, that's totally okay. I think it's enough.
Yeah. Well, I was also there as a representative of the Canine Health Center. So I always love that because I just love, people are just walking by and people just love to talk about their pets and I love to ask them about them. And it's just a great way to connect with people. In fact, a couple people that I hadn't seen in years that used to be clients came by, you know, in New York City of all places. So I thought that was really cool. But I'd seen their pets for many years. But yeah, I just love connecting with people and talking about their experiences and their beloved dogs. We get on our phones, share pictures, and talk about what the Canine Health Center does and all that. So yeah, that's what I really like to do.
I really love that you brought that up because I think that was an unexpected surprise for me working with the Purina team. I've been at conferences and I've run into people I used to work with like 20 years ago and we're catching up, but just talking to people like, I don't know, all over the US. And I got into a lovely conversation with someone at Westminster who was selling, by the way, the best socks ever. And I got some socks with a soft coated Wheaton on them because I had just lost my Wheaton. But we were like crying. We were crying over my Wheaton who I lost this past year. And so just the connection you can make with people, exactly like you said, like even though you don't know them, I think animals have that magical way of bringing people together.
Yeah, especially dogs.
Well, hey now. Well, I'm equal. Don't say that to my cats. But yes, you're right. You're right. I do love my dog. Chester, if you're listening, I'm sorry. I really like cats too. So, but I digress. We're back. And so I think what the general population might not know is, yes, there's a veterinary team that are at Westminster, but you bring veterinary students with you. And that's a in and of itself, a very unique, well, first, fun thing for them to get to see, because unlike me, again, I wasn't exposed to that kind of thing. So they get exposure to a very unique setting. And two, because it's a learning experience. So what do they get to do while they're there? Like, it's a really neat thing that Cornell allows these students to do.
Yeah, well, they were there to help us if there were any emergencies. So they got to, well, they got to hang out with us. That was a really fun thing.
You seem pretty fun, you know.
Yeah, so they were there to help us. Of course, they help us, you know, set up and break down. And we had a couple different locations. I think that was a perk. They got to be there. And like I said, fortunately, we didn't have any emergencies this year, but they did get to experience the show. They got to kind of see what it's like. You know, there's a big sports medicine component to dog shows. So students who have interest in that are especially drawn to it. So I always love hanging out with vet students. I learn from them. I learn what they're doing in school. I learn about what their goals are. I learn what they're doing with their lives. And, you know, I can share what I've done. And it's just a good time.
Sharing that wisdom.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, if listeners haven't listened to that episode with Dr. Fry, I highly recommend you go back to it. But sports medicine encompasses a lot of things, right? But we're focused on mobility and movement and whether or not these are hunting dogs or agility dogs or anything. Like, there's a lot involved. Or a dog just with a dog that has arthritis and just wants to move better at home. Sports medicine is all encompassing, right? And so, okay, this was my first time at Westminster, but for those of us who have never attended, like, can you describe what it's like? Like, what is it? Is it, it's not chaotic, I have to say. I mean, there's a lot going on.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Yeah, it's like a big party.
It's kind of like a big party.
And what is better than a big party with a lot of dogs?
My God, I actually dream about this.
Dogs of every breed and shape and color, and people from all over the world, and people dressed in these sequined clothing and bright colored suits.
I love me. I was just in Vegas for a conference. I love me some sequins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's like it's just a big get together of dog lovers.
That's awesome. Right. So not everybody there owns a pet that's in the show. Like, a lot of us are there just to watch.
Yeah.
So I was sitting on the bleachers. So I think from what I remember, and I didn't get to stay for the whole thing, which is a little bit of a bummer to see everything in the ring, but there are bleachers there so you could watch events. And like, there are these runs at agility and then runs at fly ball. And then as the competition gets stiffer, the top seeds kind of keep going to compete, right? And just like in these show dogs, same thing. They kind of are shown amongst, like a pug will be shown amongst pugs, right? And then they win their category and they're like best in their category. And then they get to go to like the big show. And that's what we see on TV.
Yeah. And the other fun part is, you just get to walk around, you see people, you see a lot of blow dryers. There's a lot of grooming going on. So you get to just walk around and watch everybody getting their dogs ready. They're getting all coiffed and you get to see how all the different breeds are groomed and combed. And so, you know, that's fun as well. So you get kind of like a behind the scenes look as well.
Yes.
And people often, you know, they're interested in questions and you can take pictures. And yeah, it's just, it's really fun.
And you are not kidding, because I feel like on some days I'm lucky to shower. You're welcome, everyone, right? But, you know, you see like a borzoi walking by and you're like, that dog, or like some of these Bichons, their coat is beautiful and it's like blown out and like silky. It's like shampoo commercial quality.
Right, right. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. 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 I do. I love that you brought that up. That's amazing. Did you have a favorite part of the event this year?
Yeah, I guess it's best in show is usually, it's just like that. It's like being at a sports event. You know, it is a sports event, essentially. It's being at a hockey game and rooting for your favorite team, except
yes.
that you're sort of almost rooting for everybody. It's hard to have a favorite.
I know.
But, you know, we all kind of, we were trying to guess who would win ahead of time. So I think it's probably the best of show because it's sort of just the culmination of the whole event. And it's just really exciting. And just to see who that final, you know, who that final top dog is going to be.
Yeah. Did you guys get close in your guesses?
I think we're all over the place.
The answer to that was no, they weren't close. But that's okay.
Yeah, the judges are very experienced. They know what they're looking for. And I'm just looking, I think that one's the cutest, you know,
yes.
That's probably not how they pick them.
Yes. I mean, I think that my theory on the back end of the dog, like dog butt, like corgi butt. This is a Cornell podcast, guys, and I'm here talking to you about corgi butts, but they're just so poofy and cute. Like, if I had to say something. All right, everyone listening, you heard it here first. Corgi butt. Did you have or do you have a favorite breed that you just love or think is interesting?
Yes. And I would have to say it usually is the Pomeranian.
Oh.
Yeah, there's just something about them. I've had three rescues from shelters, and they just steal my heart every time. Just the little poofy coats and just the way, you know, they stand up on their back legs and, you know, try to get your attention and stuff. It's just, it's too much.
And the and when they like kind of trot,
yes.
No one can see this, but I have like T-Rex hands and I'm like trotting quickly, like bing, 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 right? Like it's so amazing. It just kind of fun to watch, yeah. You know? And so I love that. I know there are so many breeds to pick from. I don't know if I could pick a favorite. I think Dobermans are so regal, like just kind of stunning, like the Malinois too, like really beautiful. And, yeah. And I had worked with some Malinois in practice, right? But you're right. I couldn't pick. But shout out to the soft-coated Wheaton because I did have a rescue as well.
Sure. Yeah.
I love that. Okay.
One of the coolest things about the show is really how kind of quiet it is. Like you expect to see hear lots of dogs barking.
Yeah.
Except for the, you know, some of the agility or the fly ball, it's really surprisingly quiet. These dogs are just, you know, so used to being handled and traveling and in shows and stuff. It just sort of, that sort of makes the whole experience a little bit more enjoyable, I think.
I do agree with that. That's really, I hadn't thought about that, but it's true. When you're watching like fly ball, some of the dogs get excited, so they're barking, but the rest of the time it's like a hush. That really resonates. I love that. And so, you know, I would say that that's definitely something really surprising about like the dog show in and of itself. Do you think that there's anything else that's surprising that you want to let people know about these dog shows? It's a tough one.
I guess nothing surprising. I'm just always so impressed by, you know, how dedicated people are to these dogs. They're so spoiled, essentially, but yeah. In a good way. I mean, they're just so well cared for, and just seeing people carrying around all their dog supplies and their grooming supplies and their crates and all that stuff in and out of the hotels. And it's very heartwarming to see that they just love these dogs so much. And how it brings them closer to other dog owners. And it just, you know, it's just a really positive activity, I think, in their lives, just to spend time with these dogs and to be so proud of them. And yeah.
Agreed. If there's a hobby, I would love for it to always include animals. I really appreciate that you said that because I think what people may not understand is they think like, yeah, it's a pretty dog. They're groomed nicely, but this is not like a couple of days process. I mean, these pets are being shown throughout the year. They're going to different shows. They're being handled by a ton of different people. It starts with good nutrition, good breeding, right? Again, there's care. There's keeping them. They have to keep them at a nice, healthy weight, right? Because they literally represent their breed. So this is, yeah, it's all encompassing love. I think everybody spoils their pets, but this is definitely a different level of like dedication because they're traveling with these animals all the time. And so, yeah, it's definitely a lot. Shout out to any type of pet owner everywhere because we all love our pets. I think this is just a totally different experience for those who don't know.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
So, okay. So we talked about, because again, you wear many, many hats. So we talked about Reinie a little, which I'm really happy about because I'm so glad people now have a resource that they can go to if they're listening, if they're just curious. And by the way, just check it out. Even if you don't have a question, just go look. Sometimes there's a bunch of information that's really helpful. You could pass it on to friends or family who might be having a time with their pet, right? And then we spoke about what you do at Cornell, which, you know, we love the fact that you're a lecturer and you're meeting with students and teaching them about that kind of multitasking that it takes to be a general practitioner. I did want to highlight something because it's really important for me. I've spoken on this podcast about access to veterinary care. And that's a really important topic for me. Understanding that sometimes we have pet lovers who love their pets, but maybe are limited on finances. And that's tough because we all want to take really good care of our pets. And so you do something with community medicine in the Ithaca area. And I wanted to give you a couple minutes to like share it with the world because I think it's a really great, great thing.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I've been very fortunate since I returned to Cornell in 2011 to work with what's known as the Southside Healthy Pet Clinic. In downtown Ithaca, there's a community center called Southside Community Center. For about 30 years, Cornell has sponsored a very reasonably priced wellness clinic for cat and dog owners in the Ithaca area. So twice a month for people who need help accessing preventive care for their pets. We have clinics that are run by veterinary students. And again, like I said, for a very nominal fee, we provide vaccines and physical exams, blood testing, products to help with fleas and ticks and parasites and all of that. So that really makes it possible for people to help keep their pets healthy. And then when medical problems arise, then they may be able to have funds to devote to that so that we try to help them, provide them with that wellness care to keep them healthy. And it's a win-win for everybody. The community center, it's one of their most popular programs. The pets get care. The owners have part of the burden taken off their shoulders. The veterinary students get to learn and they also get to interact with these people and everybody benefits. It's really a good time.
I 100%
The students sometimes
agree.
Refer to it as the Southside High. Like they just really enjoy the experience that much.
That's, first of all, very catchy and amazing. And of course they came up with that.
Yeah.
As someone who participated in the Southside Community Health Clinic as a student, I can truly attest to how much it gave to me. So that's how long it's been. I was even there as a student, but it was fantastic. And I have core learning experiences that I still talk about, learning them there before I was even a doctor. And then I've had the pleasure to help you there on some occasions. And I just love getting to help the students with physical exams because oftentimes these are young students, maybe first or second year students, like young students in the program. And here they are working on their physical exam skills and they're really excited. And then, you know, we get to provide, you know, all of these things. So they get to practice pulling blood and talk about flea and tick prevention, which may not sound like a lot to some people, but it's incredibly important, especially yeah. In Ithaca, where we have a lot of wildlife. Also in New York City, people don't sleep on the flea and tick prevention. Doesn't matter where you live. And then I get to also talk to people in the community and talk to them about their pets. So there's another, like, going back to our conversations, even at Westminster, it's similar there. So I have been thankful to share in those experiences, but I agree with you. I think it's lovely that you're even thinking about, well, one, the cost of what we're providing there, but maybe, just maybe it'll allow them to save a little bit in case of an emergency or maybe that preventative care, it'll prevent them from getting Lyme disease that could turn into something or something else, right?
And many times, and you know, because you were very generous with your time, we are able to help some of these animals with medical and surgical problems at the vet school through grant programs that we have and donations.
Yes.
So medicals, you know, all kinds of things, really. Many life-changing for these animals who might not otherwise have access to it.
I consider myself very lucky to have helped with some of that. And you were a big part of that and the connection was amazing. So, I'm so thrilled we got to talk about that. That's just so important to me. And I'm really proud. And there are vet schools with community programs like this. I get to be very proud of Cornell, you and I, again, both having graduated, that we get to provide this service. Like we have an opportunity to provide this, both for the community and for our students. And hopefully our students see the value.
Yeah, and I'd say it's very inspiring. I think many of them want to go on and be sure to incorporate that as part of their, you know, practice going forward, whether it's a full-time thing or part-time or just volunteering, wherever they happen to end up living.
I love it. This has been so fabulous. Okay, so if there are more than two listeners that listen to this podcast, that they are listening and they know that I get to the serious stuff because I'm so excited to get to talk to people. But then I get to ask like a few questions, just kind of off the cuff. Don't get nervous. Just some fun things. We already know your favorite dog breed, but I just like to get to know people. And so, okay. So my question to you is sweet or salty snack?
Oh, salty all the way.
Okay. Snack of salty snack of choice.
Tortilla
chips. Wow, salty. Tortilla chips. Would you eat them plain?
Yeah, I do.
No salsa?
I'll eat them plain, but okay. Depends on how much of a hurry I am, of course.
Okay.
I usually don't do salsa in the car. It's happened, but
I would do salsa in the car. I literally have something in my car called car chips.
Oh, yeah.
I literally keep a bag of chips. I don't tell anyone at my gym.
I knew I liked you for many reasons. It's just another one. But yes, guacamole and salsa mixed together is fat.
Ooh, I love that. I love guacamole. Okay. If you have to do surgery or studying of any kind, music, yes or no?
Yes. Especially the 70s. And if it's the Bee Gees, even better.
Hey, now, I like it. I'm here for that. Now, the other thing is, I try to talk to students all the time, and I'm sure you do as well, about well-being, right? We're not just vets, even though when I graduated, I was like, I'm a veterinarian and nothing else. Michelle doesn't exist. It's Michelle the veterinarian, right? What do you do in your off time to take care of yourself?
I
just gave him a look, everyone, like, you better have an answer to this. Do you take care of yourself?
Yeah, I was going to say, I should probably do a better job at that, but
We all could.
Time with my animals.
Yes. Oh, that's good.
Walking the dogs, playing with the cats. I'm a beekeeper. I have chickens.
Wait a sec. Pause. I knew you. First of all, I knew he had chickens and his chickens are amazing. And that sounds like a really weird statement, but he has chickens that are like pretty chickens. Okay. That's what I mean, people. Okay. But you're a beekeeper?
Yeah. Yeah. It goes, but my family has a tradition of beekeeping. My grandfather, my grandfather's father, and my uncle. I have an uncle who's in his mid 90s and we get on the phone and talk bees. So that's a really cool way to connect and have an excuse to talk to him. But yeah.
Wow.
A few beehives and it's really fun. I just love, it's brought me closer to nature. I just notice what flowers are blooming. I notice, you know, I pay more attention to the weather and all those kinds of things. And just watching the bees, learning about their natural history has just been fascinating.
Oh my gosh. I love that. I put in a pollinator garden last year.
Nice. Yes.
I say like I did it. I didn't do it. Someone else put in a pollinator garden in front of my house.
You can enjoy it.
But I enjoy it. And I just love watching those like fluffy bees do their thing. That is so, have you ever been stung really badly?
Many times. Many times.
And beekeeping, just like running, is out, people.
Yes. Well, if you ever had to experience several bees under your bee veil, you haven't lived. You have never seen me run so fast through the woods as when I have several bees under my bee veil.
I think I'm speechless there for a second. You're welcome, audience. Oh my God. Okay. See, you learn something new when you do these interviews. I love that.
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. I don't think I have any more related to beekeeping. Do you have a favorite movie?
Oh gosh. I probably have seen fewer movies than anybody you know.
I getcha.
I don't think I have a favorite movie, actually. I'd have to...
I get that. It's not for everybody. Sometimes you like really have to sit and kind of like think.
Yeah, yeah. But the Walt Disney movies when I was growing up were pivotal, again.
100%.
Disney, those have really kind of stayed with me.
Yes, I still I watch them. Encanto is like, I watch that probably once a month. So, recommendation to everybody. From your curly-haired veterinarian, Purina Cornell veterinarian, Dr. Moyle, watch it. I really appreciate you being here with me. Thank you for spending the time talking to us. I really love hearing all the pots you have your hands in, right? Like all the things you do. And I think you're just critical to the Cornell program. And I'm just so happy you're doing what you're doing now. And I appreciate it.
Thank you so much. And it's really been great working with you and getting to know you more. And I look forward to many, many more opportunities.
Oh, yeah, you're stuck with me. It's fine. Thanks again for joining me, Dr. Brian Collins. Thank you for listening. And hopefully you'll tune in for our next episode and like and rate us on your favorite platform. Hit subscribe, people. Hit subscribe. And we will talk to you soon from the Cornell University Veterinary Podcast.